Hello and welcome to Journey to a Dream, which is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. We're also supported by the Andreas Racing Association. And I just want to remind you that we have got tickets to give away for every ARA meeting. Just head over to the Manx Radio Motorsport website and all the details about how you can enter are on there. But if you're new to Journey to a Dream, this is where we talk to people involved in the motorcycle world, whether they're a racer, maybe they're behind the scenes. And it's just about finding out what has got them to this point and maybe what their aspirations are. And we're talking today to a very experienced, well-known local rider from the island. He's had a bit of a mixed bag over the past year, and honestly, he's able to articulate the highs and lows of this so brilliantly. It gives a real insight into what he's been through. Let's meet him now.
I'm Jamie Williams from the Isle of Man, although my accent doesn't quite come across that way, and I race at international road race level. We compete in the IRRC, the Southern 100, the Manx Grand Prix, and we've previously obviously been to the TT, the Northwest and the Irish Nationals.
And so, Jamie, growing up in the Isle of Man, was it always a given that this was what you were going to do?
Not quite, Beth, no. I actually spent 8 years of my childhood in Southern Ireland. My mum is Irish, hence why I've got like that Irish twang every now and then in my accent. And when I moved back to the Isle of Man in 2010, I was of an age where I could appreciate the TT for what it was. And I remember sitting at Quarterbridge that particular year for first practice, and I was hooked straight away. Because again, I was like 16 and I was of an age where I could really understand what it was all about and the atmosphere and everything. And that was it. I wanted in from that point. And that's what I started to work towards from that year.
And so before that then, had there been much involvement with bikes at all?
Yeah. I mean, growing up in the country in Southern Ireland, I was pretty spoiled in a way that we lived in the middle of nowhere. And I had everything from motocross bikes to quads and anything with an engine in it. I was all over it. And we dabbled with a little bit of motocross here and there, but nothing overly major. But the Irish road racing at that stage wasn't really, because it wasn't on my front door, I didn't really sort of know about it. I didn't go to any of them or anything. It was only really when I come back here, that's when my real love for racing started.
And in terms of your family, were there any other racers in the family?
No, because usually growing up, your dad's done it, or you've got somebody within, you know, your bloodline that's been involved some way, shape or form. But I'm the first out of the family to sort of do it. And it's funny because I've one of five boys and I'm the oldest and none of the rest of them have followed either. So I don't know if it's like they think I'm a lunatic or they're just not interested. I'm not quite sure, but no, I'm the only one.
That must have been quite a household to grow up in. And I'm just curious about what the family reaction was then. When you come back, you're 16, you're obviously at that age where you are, you know, fighting for a little bit of independence and whatever. You've got this dream. How did the family take it?
As any mum would, really. You know, she didn't take it too well to begin with. I think it was just the fact that she just didn't want to see me hurt myself or whatever. And it did take her a while to come round to the idea of it. My dad, on the other hand, was like polar opposite. He was full support and loved the idea of it and whatever. But no matter what, even though my mum was a little bit against it all to begin with, she still supported me 110%. And now, all these years later, they still live in Southern Ireland. So it's like a yearly thing for them. They'll pack the motorhome up, they'll come over for the Southern, they're here this week. Obviously, they've come over for the TT in the past, the Manx Grand Prix, and they love it. And my mum looks after all the team and she cooks and makes sure everybody's fed and watered. And it's a real family effort. So they've come round to the idea in the end.
That must mean so much to you, because support like that is just absolutely priceless.
Of course it is. Having that support network around you, whether it's family or team or, you know, people that are involved directly with you within the race, and it's the most important thing. And especially for us, because we are also close-knit and we're a little independent privateer team, that's what we base our core values around. It's a family.
So there you were then, age 16, standing there watching the bikes go around, thinking that is going to be me one day. What steps then did you take to make sure that that was going to happen?
So at the time I was working for a local company, the Garage Door and Gate Company. And it's actually quite funny how it come around, because the guy I was working with at the time was a local guy called Mike Kane. And Mike has competed at TT, Southern, Manx Grand Prix. And as much as he doesn't like to admit it, he was the man who put me on my first bike and helped me get sort of paid the way into racing, because he'd been there and done that obviously for many, many years. And he's such an experienced and humble and down-to-earth fella. He really sort of directed me in the right way. And first and foremost, it was it was the local circuit, which was Derby. So we went about and got our race license, and we'd done some track days. We basically bought a Honda 400 that was in boxes. It wasn't even a complete bike. And we spent many a night and weekends up at the Garage Door and Gate Company using a workshop building this bike to start track daying with. And I think my first track day was 2012. Because it took me a couple of years, obviously. I was here on my own, essentially, and I was working away, obviously trying to pay my way, whether it was, you know, with my rent and everything else, and keep myself afloat while trying to squirrel away some money to one side to get myself going with the racing. But 2012 was when I'd done my first sort of proper track day at Derby, and then that quickly formed into my first season up there in 2013.
Presumably, was this the whole reason that you moved back to the island?
No, not necessarily. I finished sort of my GCSEs back home in Ireland, and I come out of school. Ireland wasn't in a great shape. It was obviously in the middle of a recession. There was no opportunity for apprenticeships, or I couldn't really see a way forward. And I wanted like independence, and I wanted to just do my own thing. And I fought tooth and nail with my mum, and I still had family as such here. So it wasn't like I was just coming here solely on my own. Like, we'd lived here when I was a kid, and we'd a lot of family connections and stuff. So, but I fought tooth and nail with my mum to move back on my own. And eventually I was more mature than your average 16-year-old, if that makes sense. I had my head screwed on to a degree, and yeah, she let me go. And that was it.
I suppose that's what comes of being the eldest of five boys.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it was the other way around, she'd be kicking some of the other ones out of the house when they turned 16. but yeah, she willingly let me go. But honestly, I think it was the best thing I ever could have done, because it made me grow up, not fast, but it teaches you discipline and stuff. And I had to do what I had to do. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of kids now, they grow up too fast, don't they? But for me, it was the best thing I ever done. Looking back now, I wouldn't change it. I'd do it all over again.
So then you were up there racing around Derby, presumably getting to know a lot more people within the scene, which might have just helped you progress along a little bit. Where did you go next?
From Derby, like I say, we'd done the first sort of season at Derby. And when I started racing at Derby, it was always to go road racing. I never started racing to ride around the circuits, because like going to the TT course was always the aim. That was always the dream. And obviously you needed at the time 10 signatures from three different circuits, I think. And you can only get two of them from Derby. So we had to obviously go across the water. And there was a little group of us actually that went away at the time. And we used to share vans and hotel rooms and awnings. And it was Ashley Blake, Brennan Farragher, myself, Matt Milchreist, Matt Morley. There was quite a scutch of us that sort of all went away together. And we went to Aintree, Darley Moor, Anglesey, the close ones, because again, money wasn't readily available. We were only working, sponsorship was very little, and we were only at the bottom of the ladder, really. So we just went across, done what we could do, got the signatures we needed, and then just steadily built up to getting that national license to eventually get on the TT course.
I mean, that is an added hurdle, isn't it? I mean, it's great being over here, and obviously it's seen by so many as the home of motorsport when you think about the mountain course, but actually getting across and doing all those race meetings and trying to work at the same time and save the money and whatever, and maybe have any sort of normal life. Were you much of a party goer?
Look, I think everybody has that period of like late teens where you've got the freedom and you're out every weekend and you drink copious amounts on a Friday, and then you think Saturday morning I'm never doing that again, and you end up in the Outback at 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning. But I think everybody in the Isle of Man's done it at some point. But bikes were always a priority to me, if that makes sense. It was always my passion from that point when we started, and it's all I really cared about. I don't even drink that much now, really. I went obviously through, like I say, every late teen goes through that mad period, but my life ended up just revolving around motorbikes.
So then we went across, you got your signatures. Where was your first road race?
So my first road race would have been the post TT. I'm going to say 2016, but I could be wrong. It could have been 2015. I've had a couple of bangs to the head since then, so excuse my information sometimes. I think it was either 2015 or 2016. I'd done the post TT for my first road race, and that was like hook, line and sinker. That's all I ever wanted to do. From that first experience, that was it. I was hooked. And then we moved on then, obviously, from the post-TT. We'd done the Southern 100, and then we'd done the Mike's Grand Prix as a newcomer in 2016.
Gosh, it must be quite something, you know, when you've got this dream and you're thinking, I really want to do that, to then actually go through the ranks, say, racing down on Balaun, which is, you know, the irony being that you were one of the ones taking some of the newcomers out down there last night. And, you know, I guess it's something that you never forget, that first time out on the road.
Never. And it doesn't matter what road race it is, whether it's your first time around a mountain course, that's special. But your first ever time on closed roads, it's a bit surreal because, number one, well, for me, you sort of leave the dummy grid to go out for your first practice as a newcomer. Because you've never experienced it before, almost feels illegal that you're A, out on closed roads, and B, there's nothing coming the other way. Do you know what I mean? Because you're so used to it just being normal. But yeah, it is special.
I guess that's
special.
Even more so for somebody who's from the Isle of Man and is so familiar with those roads. The idea that you're actually then suddenly let loose on them and, as you say, can pretty much do whatever speed you want. It just seems a little bit, yeah, mind-bending.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right when you first do it. And like you say, when you go down Brayhill for the first time, that's a whole new level.
What do you remember about that?
A lot of hard work on the lead up to it, obviously. But I'm not really a nervous person. I don't really get that nervous before anything. But that day, my stomach was like a washing machine. It was so bad. And I think it was more anticipation and the unknown, because you've done a million and one laps. You've spoken to Milky and you've been out with different people getting pointers, information, and you've watched, like say, the onboards and stuff. But getting that tap on the shoulder and heading off down Brayhill for the first time. It was actually Jamie Coward that led me round for my first ever lap as a newcomer. And he was on a classic 500, as far as I can remember. And it was just trying to take everything in. And you're riding through places and you're going, Jesus, like, this is not right. But it was just smile from ear to ear. And you never forget that first lap. It's like nothing else. And you can do quite a lot of laps around the TT course now. But that first ever lap on closed roads, you'll never forget it, ever.
And you talk about the fact you've done loads of laps. Obviously, there's a lot of focus now on newcomers and bringing them on. And again, I'm guessing that, like so many of the other people we've spoken to on this podcast, you make those friendships at that point as well, and people going through the same sort of experiences.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm racing with guys now that I started with back when I'd done my first races. Like, and Mikey Evans was another one. You know, we'd done the Manx Grand Prix. I think we'd done the Manx Grand Prix as newcomers that year. Miggy won the Manx in 17. There's loads of guys that are still doing it now that I started racing with and still friends to this day. And it's nice, that, as well. You know what I mean? And a lot of them are obviously local lads as well. Nathan, we've all sort of grown up together, racing and started together and gone through the ranks together.
And not only did you find you were doing something that you really enjoyed, obviously you've got a real skill for it. You've been on the podium in the MGP as well. And I wonder what that's like to sit there and think, flipping heck, I'm the one that's being turned into that winning enclosure there.
Yeah. It grabs you a little bit, that one, because when you're going up Return Road, to finish round here is one thing. When you cross that line and you get the checkered flag, you get a rush of emotion anyway because it's a TT course. You know, you just finished a race around the TT course. It's great. But getting pointed into that winner's enclosure, you dream about it. You know, you sort of daydream about it, you dream about it. It's something that you can want and wish for so much. And then when it actually happens, you're just a bag of emotions.
And so that first time in 2017 when it happened, were you aware as you were coming up the road that you were going to be turning in?
Yeah, because I was getting pit boards out on the track, and Peter Oates, quite a well-known fella, the Southern 100 and stuff. Peter's religiously been giving us pit boards for years at Sulby, at the exit of Sulby Bridge. And then I've been getting boards at the exit of the Craig. So I sort of knew, I think it was reduced to 3 laps that race. And we made the decision to come in after lap one to pit, whereas now you have to, it's in the rules that you have to pit after lap one. And a lot of people pitted after lap two. So we had like a flyer straight away after lap one. And I think it was the third lap, I was getting the board to say that we were in a pretty good position. But you still can't bank on it, because until you cross the line, anything can happen. And yeah, with that first podium, it was sweet. It really was. But then you want more. That's the problem.
Do you know what blows my mind, though, is how, when you are going at such speed, you've got the presence of mind to actually think, oh, there's a pit board there. Oh, that's for me. And that's what it's telling me. It's like, how do you process all that information?
The TT course in particular, I think it's because you're on your own 90% of the time, and you get into a way of riding. Like, round here, it's smooth and it's fast, but it becomes, for me, and I know a lot of lads probably can relate to it, but after the first half lap, everything starts to slow down and it just becomes like slow motion. And you laugh, but you can pick people's faces off the hedges.
Honestly, can you?
Yeah, honestly, I've had it where I've been going down like Croncnavoddy and you'll pick somebody's face out of the hedge and you're like, oh, there's Dan, or... And it's crazy. And then the smells you pick up as well and stuff.
So it is like you're hyper-aware.
Yeah, it is. But your first lap of the festival, it's that first half lap feels absolutely bonkers, or the first lap feels bonkers, and everything's... You're trying to readjust your brain to everything, but then it will, and it does switch, and everything becomes, like I say, slow motion almost. But yeah, it is crazy. You do pick up like people's faces and signs and your pit boards and stuff, but it's not like that everywhere. It's just here is a little bit different.
I guess the other thing then you are going to be hyper aware of is if there's anything wrong with the machine you're on. And I know you have had times when you've been leading the race and then you've been let down by a mechanical. And I can't imagine, Jamie, what that is like at that point.
No, you are hyper aware of your machine as well, because you're constantly listening for changes in engine notes or the bike sounding a little bit different, whether that's exhaust note, engine note. And you can also feel it as well. Yeah, mechanicals around here. Do you know what? I've had such bad luck on numerous occasions. It was at 2022, we rode the Super Twin for KTS, and the guys put together a fantastic bike and proven machine as well, obviously with Jamie on it. And all week we were flying. We were top of the timetables all week. And we come to race day, and you can never bank on it. You can never say, just because you've been fastest all week means nothing when it comes to the race. Yes, you know you've got the speed, you know you can do the times, but again, anything can happen. And we went through the race. Everything seemed good. Everything seemed fine. I think we were 14 seconds in the lead on the last lap. And I come out of Ramsey. And as I come out of Parliament Square in Ramsey, the bike blew a load of water out of the expansion bottle. And the temperature went through the roof on the dash. And I thought, oh, you're having a laugh here.
I bet that's what went through your mind.
You're having a laugh. Because yeah. Everything went real smooth. Everything went smooth. And then I thought, if I can get it up on the mountain, temperature's a little bit cooler, it might just keep it okay and just labour at home, we might be able to salvage something from it. And hey, look, I got it up out of the gooseneck, and when I was heading up the mountain mile, the temperature was a drop right down, the bike felt okay, and I thought, we might just be able to do this. And then we come out of the bungalow. As I come out of the bungalow, the light come back on, temperature went through the roof, and then that was it.
Do you know, that must be such a difficulty when you're going around, and you must be having almost that argument with yourself, because there's part of you that's going, you should probably stop here and not try and push it.
Yeah, listen, you've come that far in a race and you're leading by so much. You don't want to believe it. Do you know what I mean? Like, if the bike had just cut out dead and that was it in Ramsey or on the run up the mountain, and you kind of understand, but I don't quite know why or what or why it done it, but it happens. But listen, I couldn't have broke down in a better place if you ask me, because I pulled in just after Brandywell and I sat on a hedge for 2.5 hours and I cried, I got angry, I laughed at it and got it all out of my system. And I think that was probably the best thing that could have happened, because if I'd have pulled in at the Craig and you're surrounded by loads of people and stuff, it was the best place it could have happened. And like I say, it's nobody's to blame. These things happen and you've just got to pick yourself up and move on.
But that's a really important point, Jamie, that actually you have to process all of those emotions, because so much has gone 100%. Into it, and you know, you have to go back and face the team and face everybody. But to be able to sort of take that time, yeah, it kind of really makes sense that you needed to do that.
You have to process it, because if you don't, it's like any emotion really. If you trap it up, you keep it locked inside you. It's not good for you. But yeah, it was one of them. Everybody took that one really personally. I've never seen my dad cry up until that day. Our main sponsor, Sean Oates, Peter Oates' young fella from Castletown. Again, everyone was really upset because we knew what we could have had and we were so close. But like I said to you, nothing is written until you've crossed that line.
The other thing that we know, and again, we do talk about frequently on this podcast, is that motorsport is fraught with danger. We know incidents happen. Obviously, you had one at Kate's Cottage last year, which really did end your campaign prematurely. I'm guessing, again, that it's a difficult thing to process and go over, I suppose.
No, of course. Listen, I've been injured in the past. We left the podium at Manx Grand Prix in 2017 to go to the TT in 18. I ended up getting an injury at Jerby in the March before the TT in the Northwest as a newcomer at both events, and it destroyed my year. And after the TT finished, I packed up and then I went through substantial knee reconstruction with ligaments and stuff, which put me at a 19. Hence why we went back to the Manx Grand Prix, because we had such a long time away from the job. But last year hit a bit different. Like I say, I've been unfortunate enough to break my leg, and I've done ligament damage to my knees, and I've broken ribs. I've done all sorts. But for me, crashing on the TT course is a little bit different. There's nowhere around there you want to be getting off. And you always think, it's never going to be me. And when something's outside of your control and you know it's happening, you're just a passenger. It was a real difficult, difficult time. The crash itself, I can remember from start to finish. There was no point I was unconscious. And I don't know if that's... I think it's helped me. I think it's helped me in a lot of ways. Mentally, it's helped me in a lot of ways, because I could understand why, how and what happened. And I can sit back now and you sort of, not joke about it, but you can sort of, you can have a proper conversation about it, and people go, oh, how do you think you go at the Manx this year? And you're like, well, I hope we get further than Kate's. Do you know, you sort of do make a joke about it, but when you roll back, that crash last year really, obviously physically, it absolutely battered me. And at one point nobody really knew if I was going to get through it. I was in a pretty bad way, but the medical team, the marshals, everybody involved, like I've literally, there's only two people out of the whole circle of folk that attended to me during that time. There's two people I haven't caught up with, and that's Paul, the helicopter pilot, and Richard Wilson, the traveling marshal. I've caught up with all the marshals and stuff, but they were all obviously a massive part to play in keeping me right. But the hardest part about it all was, I've done quite well with the recovery from a physical point of view, and again, that's thanks to so many people, Kathy Davis, Dave Downey. I could sit here all day and rhyme names out. But it was the mental aspect. I went through a real difficult, difficult, difficult patch for about 4 to 5 weeks. Proper depressed. Real. I was in a real bad way. And I've never struggled with that before. And that's what really got me. I was like rock bottom. And again, it was friends, family, Aoife, the good support network I've got around me that really got me through all that. And once I got past that mental block and mental strain, it was just a one-way road then for me to fight. And I used it all as ammunition to try and get back better, fitter, faster, and build on it. But look, Beth, things happen. Accidents happen. It's how you pick yourself up and you come back, and it's the return that matters, isn't it, at the end of the day? You can't dwell on it.
Well then, Jamie, as we're speaking, it is Southern 100. And as I mentioned, you had that first night out, taking the newcomers out last night. I think you were saying it was a little bit of a mixed session for that first qualifying.
Yeah, it wasn't our best night qualifying, to be fair. And it was disrupted by a red flag in the first super sport session as well. But I don't know. Southern's a little bit weird. I've been doing a lot of racing in Europe. And yes, the road races out there, but they're not road races as we know them here. Like, a lot of the roads out there are like billiard tables. So it's the first sort of road race I've done this year, which has got such aggressive bumps in the braking zones and stuff, and that real aggressive nature of riding. Because the Southern 100, although it's fast, it's an aggressive change of direction at high speed and real bumpy on the brakes, on the run into, obviously, Ballabeg, and on the run out of Ballabeg to Ballawhetstone and stuff. It's not like that in Europe where we've been racing, so it was a little bit of a shock to the system. But all in all, it wasn't... I beat myself up right, left and centre, because I have a goal, and if I don't hit that goal and we're not where we want to be, I kick lumps out of myself. But I'm sure tonight will be a better night.
Well, yeah, and to be fair, I guess it's in qualifying that you want to have those little issues and whatever, isn't it? Because that's the whole point of hopefully getting those ironed out.
Exactly.
Just talk to us about what's been happening sort of European-wise, because you've been doing pretty well out there.
Yeah, so we branched out to Europe a few years ago, because obviously the Irish national scene, the whole thing obviously went under and there wasn't a hell of a lot happening. And again, I'm not a short circuit rider, so we thought, we'll test the water out in Europe. There was a lot of people ranting, raving about like Henglo, Chimay, Horicha and Czech Republic and stuff, and we thought, we'll go and dip our toe in the water and sort of see what it's all about. And it's nice to do something different. And same rules apply. We went out, we done, I think it was two rounds out there in 2022 or 23 maybe, and it was hook, line and sinker. Because you're getting to see places you'd never really dream of going to normally. Paddocks are amazing. The people are amazing. Fans are amazing. The racing's awesome. And the road circuits are really, really cool. So this year, off the back of what happened at the Manx last year, I wanted to try and come back this year and get as much riding under my belt as viably possible. So we decided to enter the IRRC Supersport class, which we normally do anyway. And then we've also entered the Belgian Twin Trophy or the European Twin Trophy Challenge. But on top of that, the Supersport and the Super Twin run a short circuit championship, and they coincide with each other at like 90% of the short circuit meetings, and they're always in and around a weekend before or after the road races. So with us being out there anyway, in my great wisdom, I thought, we'll just stay out there and we'll just go from race meeting to race meeting. And I didn't have a major plan this year other than get myself back up to speed, get the momentum back and get the confidence back on a bike. And lo and behold, we're leading the European Supersport Championship by 56 points, I think. We're second in the Twin Championship and we're fifth in the Open Twin Championship. And it's gone better than expected, to be fair.
And in terms then of how many rounds and stuff are left, how's the schedule looking?
So after the Southern 100, we leave to go to Chimay, which is in Belgium. That's for there's basically three championship rounds there. It's a little bit weird how they do it in Europe with the championships and how they work it. Some of them don't see Chimay as a road race. They see it as a short circuit. Anyway, we're off to Chimay next in Belgium, shortly followed by Horus in Czech Republic, which is, again, another road part of the championship. And that lies the weekend before the Manx Grand Prix starts. So we've got a busy couple of weeks between Southern and the Manx. And then it's like all hell breaks loose and 14-hour drive from Czech back to Rotterdam to get the boat and try and get back to the Isle of Man as quick as possible to get everything sorted for the Manx Grand Prix.
You need all of this for your book that you'll write when you're retired and looking back at how brilliantly you've done.
I'm not sure many people will buy it though.
In terms of fitting all of this in, presumably you're not trying to work at the same time, are you?
I try and get as much in as I can. It's very, very, very difficult. I'm very fortunate. I've got some real good backers and sponsors. Normally in the wintertime, I'll work my backside off from like end of September right the way through till end of March, beginning of April. But with me being injured all winter, it was a little bit more difficult. And I've probably picked the wrong year to try and cram in as much as possible. But it's an all-round effort between Aoife puts as much in as I do.
And Aoife's your partner?
Yeah, Aoife's my partner. She works her backside off just as, or if not as more than anybody else, to make ends meet and make sure that everything's paid for and at home and stuff. And without that, it's not possible.
So, I mean, you mentioned you've got some great backing and sponsors, and so much hinges on this, doesn't it? It's just finding the right support. Who have you got alongside you?
Well, like I say, it's been building over the last couple of years. We've had, it's not a trio anymore. I suppose he's got a group of businesses, but Locum and Andy Gibbs that has Jack's, Barbary, Frank Matchams and A&J Butchers. Andy's been like a big part of the job since 2016. I think he started sponsoring us. And he's actually my godfather. So I'm very, very, very lucky in that respect that Andy's stayed with us for so long. And then we've been very fortunate last couple of years that we've had the Claremont in Douglas, the hotel on the front there. They've been our title sponsors, so they are our main sponsor for 2024 and 2025. And it's real nice to get a big sponsor like that on board. And again, this is the reason why we can do what we can do and get out to Europe and stuff as much as we are. And because it's such a big sponsor, as in, it's one of the best hotels in the Isle of Man, if not the best. You know what I mean? So I was pretty stoked to get that one. But it comes in from all aspects, really. After that, we've got Dave Everett at Forever Road Racing. He has the campsite at Colby and St John's during the TT and the Manx and the Southern. Dave's been with us for the last 3 or 4 years. But a lot of these guys actually have come in through our supporters club. We've a club called the 92 Club. Obviously, membership's £92. And they get the name on the bike and a team T-shirt and stuff. We've had like Nick and Paula at MPP Landscapes. Them guys have sponsored us for the last 3 or 4 years. They were 92 Club members to begin with, and it's branched into something more. Alan Hughes, Forestry in Wales. He's been on board with us a few years after we met him back at the TT in 2018. We've also got JK Cotins, John Knott. Again, all these guys have got such a passion for motorbikes. It's real nice to have them involved. They want to be involved with it. And again, this all rolls back around to that family thing. Another big one for us is John and Christine Bridges. Again, they were a couple that we met 5 years ago, and we nicknamed him Grander John. He's just, he loves the racing, he loves being involved. And it's nice because they come down, they can see the name on the bikes, and they can't do enough for you. And of course, Sean and Jane Oates, they are the NCE racing that you see on the bikes and all over the bannering and the lorry and everything. Sean and Jane, they're family from Castletown. Again, Sean's dad's Peter, that's heavily involved with the Southern 100 Club and has been for years. Sean and Jane, again, helped me out back in 2000 and it was a back in 2016 or 17, I think, through the 92 Club. And it's gone from the 92 Club to helping out a little bit more and a little bit more. And lo and behold, they ended up being our main backers, really. So Sean and Jane put the machinery into the team that we maintain and run. But they're not only sponsors, Beth, they're like family. They do everything. They keep us right when we're racing. Nothing is ever a problem. But I call Jane like my Manx mum. And Sean's more of a best mate and brother type thing. And they're not just sponsors. Without them guys, we couldn't do what we could do. It's the same with all our sponsors. Without having the input and the backing from everybody involved, every single one of them, it just wouldn't be possible. And that's what means more to me than else. It's not just a case of having a sponsor that gives you a few quid that you can go and buy a set of tyres or something. I'll say it again and again, it all revolves back around to that family, close-knit team feel, and everybody is involved for the right reasons. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's fantastic.
So here we are then, as we keep saying, Southern 100. I know, having spoken to you for the past sort of half an hour or so, you will have a definite goal in your mind of what you want to achieve, but you're probably not going to share that with us. What does success overall, though, if you look back at the 2025 season, what do you think success is going to look like for you?
Well, obviously, In my own mind, I know what we're capable of. Like the Southern 100, I have my own, obviously, set goals. I know what we're capable of doing. I know what the bike's capable of doing. And it's within reaching distance. But in an ideal world, if I could sit back at the end of this year, again, not that I'd ever dream of it, but if we can tie up a couple of these European championships, it would be a massive tick of the box. And it gives you that confidence. But I've got to say it, but ultimately, to be pointed back into that winner's enclosure at the Manx Grand Prix. And that top step is obviously what we're aiming for. That's what I want. I want my hands on that trophy.
And I know we sort of talked briefly about sort of TT and how that was sort of played with injury a few years ago. Is that still on the horizon?
Of course it is. I mean, the TT is where you want to be. It's any road racer's sort of aspirations, dreams. That, for me, it's where you want to be at. Now, the Manx Grand Prix, they've been very good to us over the last number of years. It's where I cut my teeth with the road racing as well. And it always play a massive part of who we are and what we are. I'll always support it no matter what. But ultimately, it gets to a point where you've got to a point in the Manx Grand Prix, you need to go to the TT. You need to be dragged on with the faster riders. You need that calibre of rider around you to drag you forward and help you continue to climb that ladder. And ultimately, that's where we want to be next year.
And if someone's listening to this, Jamie, and thinking, do you know what? I've watched those riders out there on the mountain course and I just want that to be me. What advice would you have for someone in that position?
Go for it. Chase your dreams. You're only here once. Life's short. It doesn't matter what it takes. If you really want it, you'll do it. And you'll make it work one way or another. Too many people sit back later in life and say, I wish I'd done this, I wish I had that opportunity. But you got to make the opportunity. You have to chase it, want it, and have that drive behind you to do it. And I mean, if it doesn't work out, you can always sit back and go, listen, I gave it my best shot, I gave it my everything. But you do need, obviously, you do need the backing, you need the people behind you, but you need to make the opportunity yourself.
And you mentioned your supporters club, and obviously I assume you've got quite a big presence on social media, just keeping people up to date. Where can people follow you and get involved?
So we have a website, www.jlgracing.com. We've got an online shop there. People can join the supporters club on there. We're obviously on Facebook and Instagram, JLG Racing. We post up on our Facebook page probably more than anything else, but the website is updated on a regular basis, and that's where you'll find all the up-to-date information.
Well, it's been brilliant talking to you, Jamie. We'll post all the links to your social media and the website on the podcast page. And I'm assuming with four younger brothers, they all look up to their big brother, do they?
Probably. Like I say, some of them probably think I'm absolutely crackers. You know, I've got nieces and stuff, so they've sort of taken a different road in life. We haven't got kids. We've no real, like, major responsibilities. So I'm like the crazy uncle.
You should get a T-shirt with that on it.
Yeah, I know.
Jamie Williams, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jamie Williams, just brilliant to talk to him, and especially after what was such a difficult year in 2024, to hear how he's doing is just fantastic. We wish him all the very best for the Southern 100. As I speak, we are just on day three of the meeting, and obviously we've got Championship Day on the Thursday, so everything crossed for him during that, and of course for MGP and the European races as well. We will keep up to date with how he's doing. The links to his website and Facebook page are on the podcast page. Journey to a Dream is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, and you can find out more about them by visiting their website. It's kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. And once again, if you'd like to be part of a future episode, do get in touch. It's bethesby@manxradio.com. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.